Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Okay, so imagine this. A condition that messes with your eyes, your spine, and your kidneys all at the same time. Sounds pretty complex, right? What if it all came down to just one tiny tweak in your genetic code?
It sounds like science fiction, but it's a very real challenge.
Exactly. And for a lot of kids and their families, figuring out the why behind it has been, well, incredibly frustrating. We're talking about things like congenital eye problems, coloboma specifically. That's where parts of the eye just don't form correctly. It's actually a major cause of childhood blindness.
Mm-hmm. And even when it seemed pretty clear there was a genetic link, pinpointing the actual cause?
Yeah.
That's been tough. Families often didn't get a precise diagnosis.
Right. So today we're digging into a really exciting discovery that connects these dots, these seemingly separate symptoms. It finally identifies a specific gene responsible. And it makes you wonder, how could solving this kind of mystery change how we diagnose these really complex multi-system conditions down the road?
It's a fantastic question. And this work really does represent a significant step forward, particularly in understanding human development. So today, we should definitely celebrate the work of a really dedicated team from the National Eye Institute at the NIH. They had collaborators, too, from the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology, Columbia University, Moorfields Eye Hospital, and others. Their detailed research has, well, really pushed forward our understanding of these tough congenital malformations.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit more. What exactly was the scientific problem they were tackling? You mentioned coloboma.
Right, so the specific issue is colobomatous microphthalmia. It's a severe eye defect that happens really early in development. There's this thing called the optic fissure, basically a seam in the developing eye. And if it doesn't close up properly, well, that's where the problems start.
And this is part of a whole range, right? Like microphthalmia, where the eye is too small.
Exactly. Microphthalmia, small eye, or even ophthalmia, where an eye is missing altogether. Coloboma fits into that spectrum.
And you said it's a big cause of childhood blindness, even though it's rare overall.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive, but coloboma can account for up to maybe 10% of childhood blindness cases. And like we said, despite years of research, genetic testing often came back inconclusive. The diagnostic yield, as we call it, was disappointingly low, especially for cases that just seemed to be isolated eye problems. It was a real puzzle.
A needle in a haystack situation, basically.
Not much.
But then researchers started seeing a pattern, something beyond just the eyes.
Exactly. They noticed that some patients with coloboma, they also had other issues like missing vertebrae in their spine or kidney abnormalities they were born with. It was this recurring combination of symptoms, but without a known genetic cause, just this clinical observation hanging there.
Until this study.
Right. This study finally shines a light on the genetic basis for that specific pattern. And now it has a name, OVR syndrome.
OVR, oculovertebral renal. Makes sense. Eye, spine, kidney.
Precisely. It describes the triad of affected systems perfectly.
So how did they track down the gene? What was the approach?
They used what's called a genome-first approach, which is really powerful here. They started by doing genome sequencing on individuals from six different families. Critically, these families all had individuals showing that specific OVR combination, the eye, spine, and kidney problems.
So they were casting a wide net, genetically speaking?
Exactly. Looking for rare genetic changes, variants, that might be the common thread linking these seemingly unrelated conditions, letting the genetics lead the investigation, really.
Okay, so they find some candidates through sequencing, but just finding a variant isn't enough, right? You have to prove it actually causes the problem.
Yeah.
How did they build that case? I gather they started with computer modeling, in silico stuff.
That's right. The first step after finding the candidate variants was using these sophisticated in silico tools, computer simulations. These models help predict how those specific variants might change the protein that the gene codes for. Like, would it change its shape? Would it affect how it binds to DNA?
Ah, so trying to predict the molecular consequence.
Exactly. It gives you that first really strong hypothesis about what might be going wrong at the protein level. Sort of like a molecular blueprint of the potential problem.
Okay, computer prediction's done.
Yeah.
Then they move to the lab bench. In vitro experiments in cells.
Yep. Next step, in vitro. They use human cells, specifically HEK293 cells grown in culture. And here, they could directly compare the normal or wild-type protein, with the mutant versions found in the patients.
What were they looking for? How it behaved inside the cell?
Primarily where it ended up in the cell, its localization. This protein needs to get into the cell nucleus to do its job, regulating other genes. So did the normal protein go to the nucleus? And crucially, did the mutant proteins also go there, or were they stuck somewhere else, like the cytoplasm?
Gotcha. And then the really cool part, the zebrafish, moving into a living system in vivo. Why a zebrafish?
Zebrafish are fantastic for developmental biology. They develop externally, they're transparent early on, and their development is surprisingly similar to humans in many ways, especially for things like eye formation.
So you can actually watch development happen.
Right, and you can manipulate their genes relatively easily.
Right.
So the researchers could knock down the zebrafish equivalent of the human gene they suspected.
To see if the fish developed similar problems, like the eye defects.
Exactly. Did knocking down the gene cause eye problems, spine issues, kidney problems in the fish, mirroring the human OVR syndrome?
And then the rescue experiments.
Yes, that's the crucial validation step. First, they'd see if adding back the normal human version of the gene could rescue the zebrafish, basically fix the defects caused by the knockdown.
Okay.
Then the critical test. Could the mutant human versions of the gene, the ones found in the patients, also rescue the fish?
Then if they couldn't.
That's incredibly strong evidence that those specific patient variants are truly pathogenic, that they're the cause of the problem. This multi-layered approach, computational, cellular, and whole organism, is really what gives the finding such weight. It connects the genetic variant directly to the developmental outcome.
That is thorough. Okay, so with all that careful work, what was the big reveal? What gene did they identify?
The central discovery was identifying 6 rare variants in a gene called NR6A1. It's an orphan nuclear receptor.
Orphan meaning? We didn't know exactly what it did before.
Sort of. Its function wasn't fully characterized, especially in this specific developmental context. And these NR6A1 variants were identified as the cause of this newly defined oculovertebrorenal, or OVR, syndrome.
And how is it inherited?
It's autosomal dominant, meaning you only need one copy of the altered gene to potentially develop this syndrome.
Only potentially.
Right. And this is important. It shows incomplete penetrance and variable expressivity.
Yeah.
Meaning not everyone who inherits the variant will actually show symptoms, or they might show only some of the symptoms.
Yeah.
And the severity can vary a lot, even between people in the same family carrying the exact same variant. Genetics is rarely straightforward.
Wow. So how did this actually look in the families they studied? What were the specific clinical findings that linked back to NR6A1?
The evidence across the families was really striking and consistent. For example, in one family, they found a deletion within the NR6A1 gene, and the affected individuals had bilateral uveal coloboma, that's coloboma affecting a specific part of the eye, plus missing vertebrae. And one person was missing a kidney, unilateral renal agenesis.
Okay, the classic triad.
Exactly. Then another family had a different type of mutation, a point mutation in an NR6A1. And again, bilateral colobomas, microphthalmia, missing left kidney, and even fewer thoracic vertebrae, only 10 instead of the usual 12.
10 instead of 12. That's significant.
It is. And a third family showed similar eye issues, colobomatous microphthalmia plus cataracts and spinal calcification, also linked to an NR6A1 variant.
And this wasn't just in those initial families, right? They found more cases.
Correct. They found additional supporting cases through the UK's 100,000 Genomes Project, which specifically corroborated the eye abnormalities linked to NR6A1. It really solidified the gene's role.
Okay, let's get back to the molecular level. You said NR6A1 is a nuclear receptor. What's its day job supposed to be, and how did the variants mess that up?
Right, so as a nuclear receptor, it's basically a transcription factor. Its main job is to bind to DNA inside the nucleus and control whether other genes are turned on or off.
Mm-hmm.
It's a regulator.
Like a switch.
A switch, or maybe a dimmer. And the computer modeling predicted that some of these variants, like the ones called R92W and R43D6C, would either stop the protein from binding to DNA properly or make it fold up incorrectly.
And the cell experiments confirm this.
Dramatically so. The normal NR6A1 protein, as expected, went straight to the nucleus.
Yeah.
But the R43D6C mutant protein, it was found almost entirely out in the cytoplasm.
Step outside the control room.
Exactly. It couldn't get into the nucleus to do its job. It's like having the key but being locked out of the building. The other variant, R92W, did make it to the nucleus, but tests showed its function was impaired. So even subtle changes caused major problems.
That makes sense. And developmentally, when and where is NR6A1 usually active? Does that timing fit with the problems seen in OVR syndrome?
Spot on. The gene expression data shows NR6A1 is most active in human embryonic stem cells and in fetal tissues during really critical developmental windows. And crucially, this includes the exact time period when that optic fissure is supposed to close in the developing eye.
Perfect timing to cause coloboma if something goes wrong.
Precisely. And its expression pattern also overlaps significantly with other genes we already know cause coloboma or kidney problems. It suggests NR6A1 is part of a larger network controlling the development of multiple organ systems, like a key player coordinating different sections of the developmental orchestra.
Which brings us back to the zebrafish. When they knocked down NR6A1 in the fish, what exactly did they see? Did it really mimic the human syndrome?
The results were quite compelling. When they reduced the function of the NR6A1 gene, or its equivalents in zebrafish, the fish developed clear eye problems, microphthalmia, coloboma, just like the human patients. But it wasn't just the eyes. They also saw things like heart edema, problems with the body axis formation, and importantly, kidney defects. They could even measure abnormal expression of genes known to be critical for kidney development.
And the vertebrae.
Yes, the vertebral defects were there too. They look at somites, which are the precursor structures that eventually form the vertebrae. In the affected fish, these somites were malformed, and there were fewer of them. It really mirrored the human OVR picture remarkably well.
Okay, so the knockdown mimicked the syndrome. How did they use the rescue experiments to absolutely nail that the human patient variants were the culprit?
Right, this was key. First, they showed that injecting normal human NR6A1 genetic material, mRNA, into the affected fish embryos could partially fix those defects. It could rescue the phenotype, proving the gene's role.
Okay, so the normal human gene works in fish.
Yes. But then they injected mRNA containing those specific patient variants, like R92W or R432C. And those versions failed to significantly rescue the fish.
They couldn't fix the problems.
Exactly. Which is direct functional proof that these specific alterations found in patients are indeed harmful. They're pathogenic. They disrupt the gene's function in a way that causes these developmental issues.
And there was something about dosage sensitivity, too. Too much is also bad.
That was another fascinating finding. They found that overexpressing normal NR6A1 in the zebrafish, giving them too much of the good stuff, also caused developmental problems, including eye and vertebral defects similar to the knockdown.
So it's a Goldilocks situation. The amount has to be just right.
Precisely. It highlights that normal development is incredibly sensitive to the precise level, the dosage, of NR6A1. Too little causes OVR syndrome, but too much is also disruptive. The balance is critical.
Incredible. So pulling this all together, what are the big implications? What does this mean for patients, for families, for research?
Well, first and foremost, it's a game changer for diagnosis. This study firmly establishes NR6A1 as a pleiotropic gene.
Meaning one gene affecting multiple different things.
Exactly. And it definitively links variants in this one gene to OVR syndrome. This provides a molecular diagnosis for actually a noticeable percentage, around 1.3 to 1.4% of previously unexplained cases in two large groups of patients.
That might sound small, but for those families.
Oh, for those families who've been on a diagnostic odyssey, sometimes for years, finally getting a specific genetic cancer, that's huge. It provides clarity, ends the uncertainty.
And clinically, what changes now?
Well, for any family presenting with coloboma, especially if there are hints of spinal or kidney issues, testing for NR6A1 variants should now be strongly considered. Getting that genetic diagnosis early can really improve genetic counseling. It helps families understand inheritance patterns, recurrence risks.
And potentially allows for earlier screening for associated problems, like the kidney issues.
Absolutely critical. Kidney problems might not be obvious at birth, so knowing a child has an NR6A1 variant prompts proactive screening, which could lead to much earlier intervention if needed. It also really underscores the need for thorough clinical exams. Because of that variable expressivity we mentioned, some people with the variant might have only mild eye issues, or maybe no obvious kidney problems initially. You need to look carefully at all three systems: eyes, spine, kidneys.
So it encourages a more holistic view of the patient.
Definitely.
And this finding doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Other groups were finding similar links.
Yes, that's another important point. Around the same time, other independent studies were also reporting NR6A1 variants in patients with kidney and vertebral problems. Yeah. Finding the same gene implicated by different groups really strengthens the evidence and confirms its crucial role across these different developmental systems.
Are there still unanswered questions? Other potential effects of NR6A1 variants?
Oh, absolutely. While this study nails the link to eyes, vertebrae, and kidneys, some animal models suggested potential links to other things like intellectual disability or maybe heart defects. Whether these are also features in humans with NR6A1 variants needs more investigation. Human syndromes are complex, and we need more patient data.
And future research will dig deeper into the how.
For sure. We need to understand the precise molecular mechanisms. How does NR6A1 dosage control development? What other genes does it interact with? There's particular interest in its potential connection to pathways like retinoic acid signaling, which we know is important for both eye and kidney development. There's still lots to explore there.
It really showcases the power of that genome-first approach, doesn't it? Starting with the genes to connect clinical dots that might otherwise seem unrelated.
It really does. It's like finding the master key that unlocks the understanding of a complex syndrome involving multiple, seemingly disparate parts.
Okay, so to boil it all down, what's the main take-home message here?
I'd say the core message is that this research identifies the NR6A1 gene as a really critical player in human development, specifically orchestrating the formation of our eyes, vertebrae, and kidneys. Variants or mutations in this single gene are now known to cause OVR syndrome. This provides vital answers for affected families and truly highlights how powerful genomic studies are for unraveling these complex congenital conditions.
So what does this mean for you listening to this? Well, think about how discoveries like this one are constantly refining our map of genetic disorders. They open doors to more precise diagnoses, better counseling, and hopefully, down the line, more targeted ways to help manage these complex developmental conditions. It's a reminder that we're still uncovering the fundamental blueprints of human health base by base. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.